I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a 5K run, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute dip in the sea, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Spotlight Oral Care. I know how important oral care is to our overall health and how we really need to look after our teeth and gums by using the best products. I've been using the Spotlight Oral Care Sonic Toothbrush and I love that it gives me that dentist clean feeling and is much more effective than a manual brush and less abrasive. Use the discount code GOODGLOW25 on spotlightoralcare.com to get 25% off the entire range. Why not pick up some perfect stocking fillers this Christmas and get them delivered straight to your front door? This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Donal Skeen. It's been quite the year for Donal and his family after packing up their life in LA and moving home during a global pandemic. When I spoke to him last year, I felt like he really missed home and wanted to raise his children here. Today, I speak to him about that decision, why he feels like this is the right time for them to be here, and how he loves the sense of community and the Irish ways. He opens up about that crazy trip home and saying goodbye to LA, what 2020 has taught him from living in the now and not worrying about what's next, and how to get our kids interested in food and cooking. I hope you enjoy. I'm so thrilled to say this. Donal, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thank you very much for the second time. Exciting.
I just keep booking you in because I want to see you again. Welcome home. What, my God, I was following your journey home and it looked like some journey. What was it like?
I keep saying I still think I have some form of like PTSD after it because it was just chaos. It was chaos because it all came at once, and you know, it was in the midst of all the madness, all the COVID madness. We had been planning to come home to shoot this new TV show that we were doing, and the whole plan was to come back in May. We had the flights booked, everything, Aer Lingus was booked, everything was sorted, and we knew what we were going to do, and we kind of knew we were going to come back for maybe 3 months and spend the summer and just chill because we had had such a lovely summer the year before. It had kind of planted a seed that maybe we should be home and be spending a bit more time with family because the boys are quite young and Oliver had just been born, and yeah, it was time. And that thought process had happened, and you know, it was March, April around that time, and I actually was dead set to we had this great PR lineup for to promote this new book in America, and so I had the Today Show, the Rachel Ray Show, we had like all these great shows lined up and paid a PR person to look after us, the whole nine yards. And then literally it was the weekend of St. Patrick's Day and I was due to fly to New York to do the Today Show, and it was that whole like feeling in your stomach. You're like, this isn't right. Because I was so fearful that I would get to New York and then get stuck there and not be able to come back to the kids and whatever. So I said no to it. I didn't get on the flight. And then literally like dominoes, all the appearances fell. And like the shows were either being cancelled or they were off air. So that kind of put a stop to almost everything we were doing work wise. And then at the same time, from a lifestyle perspective, you know, like the parks were closing down, the restaurants were closing down. And we were kind of seeing ourselves being isolated in LA without the support system that we would have had at home. So it just became pretty traumatic in a way, you know, like, I mean, now that I look back at it, we were grand, but like it was scary and it was anxiety kind of inducing at the time. And then when we kind of finally decided to make the move, I actually had done a charity event for Concern in Los Angeles at this fancy Beverly Hills country club thing. I was like totally underdressed for it, and I turned up, but the Irish consulate, the new Irish consulate in LA, who had just started I think the year previous, I'm sure she had her work cut out for her this year. But I got her business card and she said, if you ever need anything, give me a shout. And I was like, I will never need her. You know, it was lovely to have, but I'll probably never need to ring her for anything of, you know, of real need. But so rang her up and she just kind of said, look, you know, the advice we're getting is that it's best to travel back if you can, at the risk of, you know, flights being cancelled. And literally, I think within a week or so, they'd cancelled the direct flight from LA to Dublin, which, as anyone with young children will know, you are counting on direct flights as much as possible. So yeah, it was just becoming more tricky to travel back. And I think At that time, Brian Dowling's husband, Arthur Grulian, who is our neighbour, only 10 minutes down the road, he was talking about kind of coming back as well. And we decided we'd all travel together. And it was this, it was like a holiday camp with fear and anxiety attached to it. So the weirdest sort of butlins that was going on that I could ever imagine having unfolded. And all the while we had to unpack, like we basically had to move out of a house, plan a transatlantic move, have a... all our stuff had to go into a container and be sent across. We had 16 bags when we left the house. And oh, Sophie said, do you want to say goodbye to that? Because I have this thing where I have to like go around and like film the house. And if we're ever leaving somewhere, even on holidays, I do it. And Sophie was like, do you want to go say goodbye to the house? And I was like, just drive. Let's just drive. I cannot even, like, there was so much stress in that situation that I just couldn't even look. And in that way, we haven't actually, I don't think we never really said a proper goodbye to this city that our boys were born in, this city that had given us so many opportunities. And it was just such a weird way to leave. But we ended up in, across two Ubers. One guy was driving who was in a hazmat suit with goggles and gloves, because it was at that time where people were still wiping their crisp packets and, yeah. You know, all their groceries and stuff.
Putting all their shopping in the bath.
Yeah. Oh, geez. And so were we, like, you know. So it was just that fear at that time, you know. And so we had 16 suitcases. We got to the airport. I feel like I'm giving you the full story.
I'm here for this. Yeah, like, front and
like
center.
Bleeding therapy here. And we just got there and it was like a ghost town. And you had no idea what you're going into. And the whole time we were so nervous about bringing the kids through this because, you know, like it was the fear.
You're wondering if you're doing the right thing.
Absolutely.
All the time.
The whole time. Because my gut was like, we just need to stay put and not put ourselves at risk. But, you know, at the same time, our lease had ended in the house we were in, and it was just this kind of perfect storm of everything coming at once, and the only way was home. And we got to the airport. Sophie and Arthur, I will hands down say, they did all the hard graft. I just pulled bags and babies. I had Oliver strapped to me. I had Noah attached to an iPad. I don't care what you think of me, but it was anything to get us through at that point. And we finally got on the plane, or actually we got through security and just kind of went and then got on the plane and went, and then like got to Paris, because that was not the original plan. Got to Paris, and then it was like another, oh God, we're there. And then we finally got home, and I just couldn't believe it. I literally couldn't believe we'd made it home. And I know I feel like I'm working myself up talking about it, but yeah. It was such a strange time, and nobody, and I felt like we were the only people traveling in the midst of COVID madness.
Yeah, because I remember being in lockdown, like watching your journey. Yeah. And I remember, I think you joked about Arthur being your nanny.
Yeah.
And I was like, I said to Jamie, oh my God, look at their nanny. He's so gorgeous. And then I realized it was Brian Downs, Arthur.
Love to hear that. He's a very glamorous nanny. Anyone would be lucky to have him.
Yeah, and he's great with kids, isn't he?
Great so. With kids. Oh, like, and honestly, like in our really, because there were plenty of low moments in the whole process, and he just brought continuously, I was going to say annoying positivity, but like there was continuous positivity there, and he is an unstoppable force. So he got us through in so many ways.
Wow. Yeah. And when I was interviewing you last year, this time last year, I was getting the kind of feeling off you that you really missed home and you wanted, you know, to bring up your kids here with your parents. So is it because of COVID that you moved home, or would you have come home for 3 months and maybe seen where you were at? Or?
I think it's, in some ways, I feel like COVID forced us to do the push that we knew was coming in a way. I think we had, like I said, that trip last summer was just, oh, was it this summer? No, I don't know. The summer of 2019, when yes. all was well in the world, we just had a glorious trip home, and it was everything we kind of were missing in LA. And, you know, LA is a beautiful place to be, but, you know, there's nothing quite like having that support system back home. So I think in some ways you're right. Yeah, like I think we were on our way back. But, you know, at the same time, like I still have continuous work out there, and even the thoughts of like having to travel now is so much more tricky. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the future holds. And like people keep asking me, like, is this it now? Are you home? Are you home for good? And I have No idea. And I think I can safely say that in 2020, because I don't think anyone has an idea of what's next, you know. But for, I keep saying the mantra of we are where we need to be for right now. And that is the thing that just keeps running in my mind, where we need to be for right now.
And when the plane touched down in Dublin and you'd collected your 16 bags, how did you feel? Was it like a huge relief just to be on home soil?
Genuinely, I was just exhausted. Yeah. I think we were all exhausted because it had been weeks upon weeks of anxiety, of flights being cancelled. Like even when we were about to leave, we ended up our flight being cancelled and then having been moved to another day. The dog, our dog Max, was being transported and he had to go through London. He missed his flight because dry ice was being packed onto the flight. Like the whole thing, every morning I would ring my mum and dad and like inform them what had gone wrong or what was going on. And it was just, it was weeks of just madness. And I was so glad to just be at home. And I think there was almost like a bit of a numbness for the first two weeks because it was just like, what is this? Because you arrive back and my parents picked us up from the airport, but they didn't pick us up from the airport. They drove their two cars. They sanitized one car, got into the other car, waved to us with visors and bleeding masks. Couldn't like hug them. You know, it was COVID time. And, you know, we packed the bags into their car. We packed the bags into ours without being able to like, because you know, all you want is a big bloody hug at that point.
Absolutely.
You know, so like we came back to a really kind of anxiety filled place, you know, like I remember going out for a walk and, you know, at that time we weren't we weren't quarantining because we didn't have COVID. So we were, I think, restricted movements. And at that time, I remember going to the beach, which is close to where we live, and someone spotting us and texting me on Instagram saying that they were going to report us to the guards because they'd seen us out on the beach and all this sort of crazy mad stuff. But I mean, I say crazy mad stuff, but actually at the time, when you think about it, people were, that was the level we were at, and that was the level of fear that was out there. And I think the thought of, if you had been following our journey and you'd seen us traveling from LA to bloody Paris to, you know, you don't know what I could have picked up along the way, whether it was COVID or anything else, but but it was that kind of moment of like, if you saw me, maybe you were fearful. But it was just, it felt mad, and it made us feel even more anxious at the time. And I think, you know, as the months or the weeks and the months kind of went on, we eased back into Irish life. And it's so, so lovely to be back. You know, it is genuinely, I can say that even as the weather's turning a little bit grim and grey and cold, and I have to face my first winter in 4.5 years, it's definitely good to be back, you know. And it's lovely to see the boys settled in. It's lovely to see Sophie kind of happy. I mean, she hasn't been able to get back to Sweden, which has been heartbreaking for her. But I think the fact that we have family close by is just, you know, absolutely core to it, you know.
Wow. And I think I was saying last week to one of my friends, like, I'm a little bit lonely in this COVID world. Like, I'm on the phone to my mum a couple of times a day. I'm Zooming. I'm, you know, I live at home with other people.
Yeah.
You know, you would think that I wouldn't feel lonely, but I think I do. And I miss that. I miss seeing my friends and kind of having the occasional night out where you just get to go out by yourself and go meet someone and have a great chat. And I think we're all kind of adapting to this new way of life.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though you're home and your family is here and your friends are here, it's very isolating, isn't it?
It is. And I think, you know, we came back with high hopes of what our amazing Irish summer was going to be back home. And of course, was none of that. You know, I think like my parents were half afraid of seeing the kids for, you know, fear of them giving hit them something or them, you know. So there was always that kind of, you know, despite the restrictions kind of lifting, you know, there was always that little bit of something in the background that you were conscious of. And, you know, I think at the best of it, we did really enjoy the summer, you know, and I think a lot of people did enjoy the summer. We're probably paying the price on this side of it. But, you know, I think everyone has had that little break for it. And, you know, even talking to people now going into lockdown, like I think of the first lockdown and I just think it was just carnage. Like it was like we were dealing with so much, you know, at that time, whether between having a newborn, like Oliver was only 3-4 months old at that point. You know, we were adapting to all the things we've talked about. And I just I felt like it kind of chewed me up and spat me out, and I was just numb and a little bit dead after it. And I actually kind of think it's taken until now to kind of get my head together and get my head ready for what this is. And even kind of looking at a lockdown now, you know, we're in level 5 of a pretty serious lockdown with cases, you know, larger than they've ever been before. But I think, you know, having had a little moment to kind of breathe and having had a moment to kind of embrace what this is and kind of look at it differently and not have as much expectations, it can help to kind of embrace it a bit more. Mm-hmm. As much as I don't like the idea of having to embrace a lockdown. But, you know, there's two ways to look at it. And, you know, it can be this miserable thing, or it can be something where you can kind of take a breather and look inwards and, you know, find those things that really do help you. And you know, I've experienced burnout and moments of anxiety and little elements of depression and things like that. And I know coming back to kind of certain things that help are absolutely key. And I think even kind of at the thoughts of coming into some sort of lockdown now, I reposted your lovely list of good things, because mm-hmm. you do need that. You need something where you've written down the things that, almost like a prescription from a doctor, a holistic prescription. What are the things that can build you up in these kind of very rough times? And, you know, even in, are we coming into week 2 of it? Like, you know, already I'm feeling there's moments where I'm like, oh Jesus, I can't. I don't know if I can.
Digging deep.
You know, just because like it was the first weekend there now, and we couldn't see family and you couldn't even see friends. My brother's, you know, far enough away that we can't see them even for a walk. And you do have to kind of reach back to those things, mm-hmm. because it is going to be a tough winter. And, you know, I think trying to kind of look inwards and look at kind of getting your head straight to start with, and then worrying about the other things, that's really probably key to getting through. And it is for me anyway.
I think what I noticed from you is that you spend time outdoors a lot as a family.
Yeah.
Like, you love going for your walks, don't you? In LA, you used to hike a lot.
Yeah, I think if we didn't have outdoor time, we'd kill each other. That's me and Sophie. So, and then you throw the kids into the mix, and then you definitely need outdoor time. So I think whenever you see me going for a lovely walk, it's probably because we've killed each other in the house.
Yeah,
and we need to get out.
Same.
There you go. But it does, you know, I think Sophie always says, like, it's like hitting a reset button. The minute you step out the door, like, all the nonsense you might have in the house together, or with the kids, even for the kids, like, we used to say Noah would have a witching hour if we didn't get him out before like 8 a.m. in the morning, like, bring him out for that walk. Otherwise, it would just be carnage in the house. So, like, there is that moment where it just is like a break. It's like the reset button. And, you know, talking about that holistic prescription, like, that is what you're looking for, is that, like, whatever's gone on before, when you put this thing in place, it makes you feel better. And look, if it's a walk for you, if it's a walk, you know, if it's a run, if it's a swim in the cold sea, which is not on my list, you know, those are the things, and that's what we're doing, that's what we're reaching towards. And I think finding or kind of acknowledging them are really important, particularly in these coming weeks.
And I think I was thinking about it in the car before I came in. It's like, what happened with your first TV episode is like the 2020 version of breaking the internet. So you cooked this amazing lamb shank shepherd's pie. Is that what you would call it?
Yeah.
And every butcher's in the country sold out of lamb shanks.
Yes.
So my mum rang me last Thursday, and she said that she went to the butcher's and got the lamb shanks and was cooking your dish, and it looked amazing. But then over the weekend, every butcher's in the country sold out of lamb shanks. So what was that feedback like for you?
Unbelievable. I mean, like, in the year that it's been, where, you know, we didn't even know that we could make that show. Like, when we came back in May, it had been cancelled, and all that travel and all that madness and that move had been not for nothing, but it, you know, from a career perspective, it meant that, you know, it was shelved, and we had no idea when it would be able to be filmed again. So there was a mad scramble. Like, that was our kind of journey to even to this point, is that we were in that mad, we did the mad move, we were in lockdown here, and then I went into this insane production schedule to create the recipes, to develop everything, because it wasn't a book this year. Normally it's quite helpful when you write the book, because the recipes are there for the show, but so because we didn't have one this year, and I don't think I could have brought myself to write one this year, we had to kind of do a lot of pre-prep for this. So it was just intense, long days. And we're still working on it. We're still doing VO for the episodes and things like that. So it's not completely done. But when you see it land, and when you see it on screens, and when you see the Butchers of Ireland selling out of lamb shanks because of this one beautiful comfort food recipe where, you know, you're slow braising lamb shanks, putting it through this really rich ragu, and then finishing it with this velvety mashed topping. I think it is a sign of the times. I think it is a sign that people are just gagging for something comforting, you know. And shepherd's pie is one of those things that just has nostalgia all the way through it. And the show at the moment, you know, like, it's been a really lovely one to do in the year that we've done it, because it is a celebration. It's my 10th year on TV. I can't believe it's 10 years. I've gone grey in the meantime.
I love that you embrace your greyness.
Well, that's because the Just for Men ran out at one photo shoot, and then I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's really tragic sitting on the loo waiting for it to turn. Yeah. For the 10 minutes. But yeah, so I mean, I think this show in particular is quite special because we're home, because it's the celebration of the 10 years. And really, you know, throughout the series, it's nostalgic recipes. The ones in upcoming episodes, you know, we do my mum's roast chicken. Like, every year we're always kind of challenged to put up, you know, new and inspiring recipes. But actually this series in particular is almost looking back at the classics, looking back at the ones that really resonate and the stories behind them. Because normally it's me yapping away in the kitchen, but this is a moment where we sit back on the chair, talk about it. There's a bit of archive footage, and it was a lovely, lovely show to put together in a crazy year.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute. But first, I wanted to give you an update on my Sonic toothbrush. Great teeth start with Spotlight Oral Care's Sonic toothbrush, the oral care staple. Designed with both efficiency and comfort in mind, it ensures an amazing clean, as it is gentle and effective in removing plaque and discoloration, even for sensitive teeth. The 2-minute timer and high frequency brush movement, along with 3 speed settings for personalized cleaning, sensitive, clean, and white, will improve your long-term oral health. With a travel case and personalization options available, it's the ideal gift for you or a loved one this Christmas. Check out spotlightoralcare.com for more. Now, back to my conversation.
Seemed like divine timing for this type of show. It's like what you said, like, it's stuff that we're all crying out for. Mm. And it's so comforting to watch it. And I think I certainly turned to the kitchen over the last couple of months as almost my therapy. It was, number one, just a break from the family, just for like half an hour to...
And you get it because they think you're doing something.
Yes. I have to make the dinner. But you can be creative. Yeah. You know, in a time where we all kind of down tools, and I wasn't, you know, getting out and working on new projects and things, it was my outlet. Mm. It was so therapeutic. And I'm sure you're hearing from loads of people now who are starting their journey in the kitchen and getting so much out of it.
No, totally. And I think, you know, that's what lockdown has been amazing for, because I think there's been people who have never cooked before and are now turning to the kitchen because they were intrigued by a banana bread, or mm-hmm. they saw that Dalgona coffee, the crazy whipped coffee. But, you know, whatever got them in there, that's where I feel like this is our time to shine. And, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years, and, you know, we have this great collection of recipes, and it's amazing to see the spikes on the website, the recipes that really resonate with people. And, you know, I'd love to tell you they're really fancy recipe, but it's chocolate biscuit cake, it's, you know, roast chicken, it's shepherd's pie, it's the classics that, once they're done right, really provide comfort. And, you know, I think it's a lovely time to see people kind of actually stepping back and realizing that their kitchen can provide quite a lot of comfort.
Mm. And I think that's what you're so great at is, you know, I could flick through your book on a Tuesday and I'd most likely have all of the ingredients in the kitchen. It's not overcomplicated. It's very accessible. I think you pride yourself on that, don't you?
Totally. I mean, and I think I only realized it in the last maybe 4 or 5 years, because I've been writing books up at that point, and lovely cookbooks. But, you know, I think I would always say that in the last kind of 4 or 5 years, I really resonated with who I was writing for. And, you know, that has kind of spoken throughout the books and throughout the shows, where it is kind of looking to, you know, and I suppose as the books have evolved, they've become more kind of autobiographical in the way that, like, when we moved out from our house in Ireland, we were in Airbnbs and we had a limited supply of equipment or ingredients. Yeah. And so I was literally putting stuff in a shopping basket with a frying pan and a pot, and I had no more. And so it kind of, it reined me in. We left a kitchen that had like pasta makers and popcorn makers and, you know, ridiculous gadgets that I would never use all the time. But I always had this like wide range of things to kind of play with. So this actually forced me to kind of look at how people are cooking and how people use their kitchens and the time constraints people are under. And as our lives got busier with kids again, that, you know, evolved into, you know, the superfood minutes, which became much more kind of geared towards trying to increase as much veggies into our diets as possible. And then family food minutes has just kind of almost hit the moment where it's like, this is what we need food on the dinner table right now, and it needs to be bloody good or else.
So, and what's your diet like?
Diet wise, to be honest, this year has been a struggle. I had started this year, I posted this picture of dad bod at the start of January, because we had just like, in the process of Sophie getting pregnant with Oliver, we literally, and we were in the worst place for it because Los Angeles is just takeout city, like, you know, there is so much great food on tap, and we had an In-N-Out burger behind our house. We had like the best Asian food in the San Gabriel Valley. So like, I literally ate my way through Sophie's pregnancy. I sympathy ate with her. And so I had, before there was the COVID stone, I had the dad bod stone. And when Oliver arrived, you'd throw sleepless nights into that. And like, there's no exercise, there's no diet. So this year has been a disaster. And I'm still like trying to get back on track. But actually, you know, what it comes down to, I've been absolutely loving, before lockdown, there's a fantastic organic farm up in North County Dublin called McNally's Family Farms, and it has literally changed the way I'm cooking, because I go up there on a Friday morning and I pick out veggies that I'm going to cook for the week, and it just dictates how I cook now. And you know, as much as I'm all for meal plans, and which I am, and we still do, this has just been my weekend little moment of pleasure. And it's that special time where I don't really have a recipe. I don't have anything that I'm testing for. I don't have any, it's not recipes for books. And I just cook in the kitchen with these phenomenal ingredients, really beautiful organic vegetables that are so different to anything you'll get in a supermarket. And it's just this moment of glorious downtime that you can, like I said, you're given a free pass because you're actually making dinner, and you're allowed to be in the kitchen and just tinker away. And so I think, you know, coming back to Ireland and cooking here has really changed how we eat. And, you know, there's definitely a lot less burgers in our life. There's a lot less, you know, Target runs for candy and things like that. And actually eating really good food. And I, like last Sunday, I made a dinner that had like six different plates of different things, and they were all from within like maybe 10-15k. And that is so, from someone who's been living in LA, that is just so different and new and exciting, despite me not having, you know, the best Thai food or the best, you know, whatever it is. This is actually where it's at, and it has kind of grounded us in a really good way from a cooking perspective.
Yeah, we have a now local farmers market that has come from COVID. It was in the car park of our local wine shop, actually, and they shut down their restaurant. It was a beautiful restaurant. But now they've obviously, you know, tried to think of what they can do with their space. And now there is a farmer's market every Friday. So I went down last Friday and I picked out like all of these different colour carrots, like purple carrots and, you know, orange and yellow. And they were just so gorgeous. I remember I was like looking forward for the whole weekend to cooking them and tasting them. And that's what I love about your new website, donalskitchen.com, is that it gives you ideas. Because I think for me, sometimes I get in a rut of cooking the same five things over and over again. But your website gives you lots of different ideas. And I love the meal planner because you can pick out, okay, on Monday I'll have this for breakfast. And actually, when you see it written down in front of you, you kind of stick to it, don't you?
Yeah, it makes you accountable.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that website.
Yeah, so I mean, we had been talking about this for nearly 2 or 3 years at this point, because it kind of came around the idea when I started writing Meals and Minutes, the first book of this kind of series. It was very much geared towards, we were meal planning like really strictly at that time, because we were kind of preparing for Noah. He was just about to be born. We were kind of filling the freezer with bunker food. We were making sure we were kind of had our game face on for what new parenthood looked like. Little did we know it'll all go down the drain. But you can strive for perfection even if you don't get quite there. And the meal planning is absolutely key. It's how we run the house. And make sure that there's dinner on the table. You know, I talked about my lovely little moments in the kitchen on a Saturday and Sunday, but through the week, Monday to Friday, if you don't have something planned, it makes life so much easier, particularly with little ones. And the meal planner website really kind of came out of that, because I would spend, when I was, you know, actively kind of really strictly keeping to my meal plans, I was spending like 2 hours and then pulling from recipes from different cookbooks, my cookbooks, from my website, and then making a shopping list, which would take its own time, and then going out and shopping for it. So by the time it all came together, it was taking me like 3 hours basically, you know, over the weekend, but it was taken over a bloody day.
Yeah.
So I wanted to create, and there's nothing like it out there. We wanted to create this meal planning tool that allowed you to kind of customize how your week looked, to be able to have recipes that had step by step. And you talk about, you know, people who haven't cooked before and lockdown being, you know, a kind of a way into the kitchen. We have had such a huge number of people who have never cooked before, but because we have each recipe step by step with visual guides, literally you cannot go wrong. Mm-hmm. So I have these mothers and who are challenging the fathers in the family to go and take the laptop into the kitchen, knowing that the ingredients are there, and let them at it. Because it's really foolproof, and you have tick boxes for all the ingredients, tick boxes for all the equipment, and literally step-by-step guides. So the meal planning side of it is one thing, but I suppose the real value is in the recipe guides themselves. So you really can't go wrong. And then once you basically have chosen your meal plan for the week, you can click a button that says generate shopping list, and it takes an hour back from my life, from what I was doing. So I was like, this has been the tool I've been waiting for. And it really, I mean, I say this because it's obviously my own, but I really am proud of it, because it works so well. And we've had so many people like literally just nailing their meal plans for the week and sorting it out. And it becomes less of the headache that you have every week. Because I think I saw a great meme saying, adulthood is basically figuring out what you're going to eat next for the rest of your life.
We're looking forward to that next meal.
Yeah, I'm figuring out like what's for dinner tonight. Mm. So like, in a way, that's what the website does, and we're keeping it really active. We've got a great community of people who are subscribers. We have a like private Facebook group who basically share what they're cooking. I couldn't have ever envisaged it being as active as it is, and it's great to see it just having evolved even within the few short weeks it's been going.
And when you're down in the local market and you're picking up your vegetables and things like that, do you have people coming up to you saying, "Donal, what will I do with these carrots?" Or do you know, do people ask you?
Yeah. Yeah, of course, yeah. Of course. And then in the butchers as well, we have a great butchers close to us, Higgins and Sutton. And I think there's a bit of both. It goes two ways. They give me their tips on what they would do with a bit of meat. And we talk about what I'm going to cook. He just handed me over some great potatoes for Ballymakenny, beautiful purple potatoes. And he confessed that he had never cooked with them before, but he wanted to see what I'd do with them just to see what would come out. So I've been experimenting with them. But yeah, all the time, you know. And actually, I haven't been in the bloody supermarkets so much this year, because obviously, you know, we've been under the lockdowns and things like that, but trying to keep it as local as possible. But yes, all the time, it happens all the time. And I only the other morning, we were out for our walk, and this was in the midst of Lamb Shank Gate, where everyone was talking about lamb shanks and lamb shank shepherd's pie, and some lovely lady came up and said, "I remember when lamb shanks, you could get them for like, you know, £3 each, and now I think they're fucking €40 a head, or sort of €40 for like 6 of them or something."
Oh,
so ridiculous, you know. But I suppose it's where you go, you know. But I think, you know, there is that lovely moment. The food really is a connecting, you know, topic. And it's something that I always love spending time, you know, having that conversation. So anyone who does stop me, I always do my best to give them some sort of recipe or idea.
And did you miss that in LA? Because LA is so big. You have to drive everywhere. And, you know, there's such, obviously, a huge sense of community in Ireland. And that's what I miss. A little bit. I miss the park run. I miss people giving you a nudge and going, "Go on, keep going." And it's little things like that, isn't it? Did you miss that when you were in LA?
We did. Yeah. I mean, I think that's like, before we left, we were in Howth Village, like right in the village. And literally, like, you couldn't walk down the village without saying hello to someone every morning, you know. So it was very much going from that to this city of 14 million people and just a huge expanse. I think in the 4 years we were there, I think we only knew one of the neighbours. You know, like in Ireland, you'd have like we moved into our house here and the place we rented, and literally we had sweets and bags of things and things being dropped in. Our next door neighbour did a floral wreath for Easter, the whole nine yards. And so like it is that kind of thing that we forget about ourselves when you go away, and you know, you almost have to step away from it to see how valuable it is. And I think, you know, Ireland going through lockdown, I am glad to be where we are for right now, like I said, because it is that sense of community. And you know, when I see what's going on in the States at the moment, it's anxiety on top of anxiety. And I think it's very hard for friends of ours who, you know, we talk to regularly out there, and you know, up coming up to an election where just you have no idea of what the outcome will be. You have an idea of what you would like it to be, but you know, it just adds even more pressure on what the next 4 years of your life over there would look like. So I think, you know, Ireland has that lovely sense of community. I know there's a few nutters out there, but it's definitely, you know, naming no names, but I definitely think, you know, when it push comes to shove, we do come together as an incredible community.
Yeah. And tell us about your friendship with Brian Dowling. This is I feel like there's a reality show in this somewhere.
We did shoot something in LA when he was there. I always slag him because he came to live in LA, and I say that he actually just came to visit LA because he was only there a couple of weeks, maybe every 2 or 3 months. And so I always gave him this hard time about that. But he met Sophie and I in the Line Hotel in Los Angeles with Arthur. We'd never met Arthur before, and that was only 4 years or 3 years ago. And they said they were talking about moving to LA, and they came, and it was actually, I mean, I'm sure Brian has talked about it, but it was quite a tragic time because his mum died literally one of the weeks he arrived in our house. And I remember getting that call from Arthur and just being heartbroken because we were all kind of intertwined at that moment.
Because he speaks about that on his podcast, that he was in your house, he couldn't find the light switches, alone.
He had our dog. He was looking after our dog Max, and I was in his. So we had done like a house swap. I was in his apartment in London because we were shooting Meals and Minutes, the cookbook, and he was in our house in LA. So we had come back. That was our first trip back with Noah, and I just remember being so heartbroken for him because anyone who knows Brian knows the relationship he had with his mum, and you know, just how much she meant to him through all the different stages of his career and life and everything. You know, I feel strange talking about it on his behalf, but he does enough of that himself, so he'd be grand. I'm sure, Brian, I hope you're okay. But I think, you know, it was a really, really tough time to be away. And I think in the podcast he has created something that has brought not only his own thoughts about it together, but also other people's stories. And in a way, it is his therapy. And it's so lovely to see him having created something that that has helped him and has helped so many other people, you know.
Yeah, I think he's done an amazing thing with the podcast in terms of speaking about grief and how people react differently to it. And I think that's what was so lovely about you guys in LA, is that when you're so far away from home, they were like your family there.
They were so close to us, you know, like, and literally 10 minutes down the road. So like, you know, we were almost at the point where we were like, we need to stop seeing each other at this point now.
We need other friends.
We need to find other friends in LA. But I think, you know, LA is such a big city, and we did, you know, we had some great friends out there, but the guys were just at the end of the call anytime, you know, as much as they disliked that. whenever we needed something, they were always there, and they were so good to, like, genuinely, you know, what they did for us at a time where we were it's the infancy of having kids. We were new parents and we had nobody out there, bar, you know, a few close friends who were going through the same thing, but they were all parents. So, you know, as any parent will know, you know, you've your own stuff to be dealing with. And Brian and Arthur just, you know, at the toughest times would scoop up Noah and, you know, look after him for an afternoon or whatever the case may be. And they were just phenomenal. They got us through some of the worst times in LA and some of the best times too, you know.
Oh, wow. Amazing friendship to have. And then tell us about my Pia is three now. She's getting really interested in the cooking. The chair comes over, the apron's on. Like, how can we encourage, what jobs can we give them in the kitchen?
You know what? It has been something I've been a little bit lax about since we got back, because I was so not forceful. I was so like encouraging is the word I'm looking for with Noah in the kitchen. And it really paid off in the way he eats, because when he sees that sort of process of ingredients being prepared and cooked, he really has a genuine interest when it lands on the table. And I really, for anyone out there who's struggling with kids eating, I would say that is my first top tip, is just get them into the kitchen, even if they're messing around with a carrot or a potato. Like, give them a job to do and keep their attention in it. Because only recently now, during the summer, after we'd come out of lockdown, we had this stool from IKEA and it is like the makings of a kid in the kitchen. Because if they can't, you know, stand beside you, it's why would they be in the kitchen with you? And there is this whole world up on a countertop that is just exciting and new, and really to kind of encourage that is absolutely key to it. He's got his red stool because we had a lovely Alana Monks, who redid the kitchen in the studio we shoot the show, had, thankfully, I think it was like some moment of serendipity, she had actually bought the stool that we left behind in LA from IKEA. That's the handy thing with international companies. So we had the same stool, and his face when I brought the stool home was just like, we're going to have some fun. And I love that. So even this weekend, what we do, you know, when we get to the suit or go to McNally's, we bring back all the ingredients, and after we pick them up from school, we lay them all out on the table. We talk about them. We pick them. So he will eat literally everything. He will try something. He'll try bits of dill. He'll try a bit of raw cauliflower. And just because it's almost like a game, he's interested in it. And it almost, there's none of the pressure of like, you need to eat this and this. And we do, obviously there's moments of like, you need to eat three more mouthfuls and stuff like that. It's not, and it's not always plain sailing. But I think for anyone who's kind of just feeling that moment of like, oh God, I can't get them to eat anything, it's just, don't give up, you know, keep it exciting. You know, I talk about my website, but like, there is that moment of like, if you're stuck in a rut with the same things, your kid probably feels the same about it. So like, try and experiment with new flavors, get them excited, talk about what you're doing, bring them into the kitchen with you, give them little jobs to do, encourage them and praise them when they do it. And that's all I know. That's all I know. It's all we've done, and it has worked really well with Noah. And Oliver is coming up behind him like a bleeding billy goat. He's eating all around him. So
I think that's such good advice, because Pia wouldn't eat meat for a long time for me. And one day I said, right, come on, we're going to make meatballs in the kitchen. So she, you know, rolled them out and did, you know, made them into little balls and put them in and put them in the oven, and we waited for them to be cooked. And then I gave her some pasta, put a meatball on top, but she had the whole thing because she made it. You know, it's a really great way to get them to eat.
You have to be a cook and a psychologist. Yeah. It's really great fun. It's ridiculous. Sometimes you end up with these arguments about, because even last night I'd made a few different things, and they just pick a day and they're not going to eat that. And it's so frustrating. And I have to, like, Sophie's like, you hide that frustration. I'm like, but what if you just try a little bit of this? It'd be delicious. And in fairness, like, he normally gives most things a go. But like, I think it's the despair when they don't, and especially if you put effort in. But like you said, you know, if you can bring them, and if you have the time to get them in the kitchen with you, it makes a world of difference.
It's actually lovely to see in your new show, the family unit. Sophie's amazing. She seems like the most supportive, amazing wife. She's, and you're clearly in awe of her and all that she does. Yeah. So it's so lovely to see you guys as a family and kind of get that little insight into your life. And I think for 2020, like, I think for everyone who's working for themselves, for everyone who's going out there and trying their best every single day, and you must have been worried about your business and what does this mean for my show and my website? And but it seems to have all worked out really well.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a crazy year and a year of uncertainty in a way. Like, I've been lucky to have a career that has rolled from one job to the next. And I think this has been the first year it's felt really uncertain. And, you know, we had particularly in LA as well, because we'd spent, you know, we had invested 4.5 years of our life to build this career out there. I had, you know, opportunities out there to do different shows and stuff like that. And, you know, it did feel somewhat that when we left LA, you were saying goodbye to that, you know, and you were kind of letting that go. And, you know, thankfully, we have had still continuous work from, you know, from brand deals and things like that out there. And we have a great management and agency team out there. So it continues. And, you know, I have no idea what that will look like into 2021. But, you know, I think in a way, and I don't want to be throw away with this, but in a way, it doesn't matter, because I think this year has just shown us that we need to kind of pull back a little bit and to kind of we're constantly, I think, it's not just me, but we're all constantly striving towards the next big thing. And this year for me has just forced me to go, you are here, you're okay, and this is right now. Mm. And in a way, you kind of have to be okay with that and enjoy it.
And just enjoy each thing. Like, I'm sure you're enjoying maybe when your TV show goes out and you see such a positive response to it, and you get the news over the weekend, that in 2020 you kind of allow yourself to just be in the moment and appreciate that as opposed to looking to what's next.
And that's so funny, because like we're doing all these, you know, press interviews for like the show, and most journalists finish with like, and what's next for you? And I'm like, I don't know, and I don't really care in a way. Like, I don't mean to be throwaway, but I don't care, because what this year has taught me is that the stress and anxiety and worry that you have about what's next in some ways isn't what's most important. And the boys at the age they are, and Sophie, you know, where we're at now, like, I'm just really okay being okay. And I think trying to keep to that is really important.
Yeah, and I think gorgeous words to finish with. And I never ask the what's next question.
I see it written down there, Georgie.
Because I do. I'm terrible at that. Something will be great. And then I'm like, oh, well, what if the next thing isn't so great? And you're just constantly worrying. But it's to just try to stay in the now and congratulate yourself on amazing little achievements, whether that's making the dinner, whether that's getting through the ironing basket, whether 100%. That's going out for a walk, whatever it may be. And thank you to 2020 for showing us that.
Yeah. And I think there is elements of, you know, I think we'll come out of this. And, you know, I think they talked about like companies like Uber starting in the last recession, and like I think this will be a bubbling up period of people having had to stop what they're doing and reassess what they want to do. And I think kind of coming into, there's hope, you know, in a year that is so awful and so terrible for so many people, you know, you have to live with a little bit of hope that we're working towards something good, you know.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I can't wait to watch your TV show. Can't wait to try out all your recipes. And thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
For listening to the Go Glow podcast, with thanks to Spotlight Oral Care. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. It would really mean a lot. And if you want to learn more about my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford or head over to my website, thegoodglow.ie.